The Battle for Liberty, Episode 25.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Battle for Liberty. Once again, I'm your host, Mike Tilden. Thanks for joining us here on the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher, and if you could do me one favor, please tell a friend about this show. Find that friend who you think is ready to hear the message of liberty and refer them over to the website at battleforliberty.com. On Facebook, we have the Battle for Liberty page. On Twitter, we're at My Battle Liberty, and on Gab, the newest social network that we've joined, we're Battle for Liberty. You can email me if you'd like, mike@battleforliberty.com, and the show notes page for this episode will be battleforliberty.com/25. That's that one convenient location where you can find all of the content that we're going to talk about on this particular episode. So no more fumbling around for long internet URLs. Just go over to battleforliberty.com/25 and you'll get everything you need. All right. Well, if you're a regular listener to this show, by now you know how passionate I am about the principles of liberty, individualism, property rights, self-determination, freedom of association, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we talk about here on this show, and that's what I really care about. And there's no question in the Western world, we have a long way to go if we want to fully realize all of those individual natural rights that I just spoke about. But that doesn't mean, or that doesn't take away from the fact that it's not also true that there are places on this planet that are far more restrictive of individual liberties than, say, the United States. And one such place is China. If you think it's bad today in China, we can't even imagine what it was like under Chairman Mao's communist China. Well, today, we're going to try to imagine. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Lily Tang Williams. Lily grew up in Chairman Mao's China under abject authoritarian rule, and she wanted a better life for herself. As you'll hear in the interview, she's always been something of a rebel. She wanted a better life. She knew she had liberties that she was not able to realize in communist China. And so she took a huge risk. She risked herself, her family, her reputation, her life to surreptitiously immigrate to the United States in 1988. Since that time, Lily has lived and worked in Denver, Colorado, and she is the former state chair of the Libertarian Party of Colorado. She ran for Colorado State Representative in 2014, and most recently, she was the Libertarian Party's candidate for U.S. Senate in Colorado in the 2016 election. What a privilege it is to have Lily Tang Williams teach us about her battle for liberty. Lily, welcome, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Oh, it's a privilege to have you on. I'm so excited to talk with you. You have an amazing story that I think my listeners are really going to enjoy. We tend in libertarian circles, we tend to talk a lot about philosophy, and there's a lack of what's really happened and real stories from real people. And you represent a real story, and it's a good one. So can you start out by telling us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and how where you grew up shaped your worldview?
Well, I was born in Chengdu, which is the capital city of Sichuan province in communist China. I was born 2 years, just 2 years, right before Mao's great cultural revolution. Not great timing. I couldn't control that. Yeah. And Chengdu, basically where we lived, it's a total, you can imagine, it's like a little commune, like a government housing. My dad, my mom worked for state factories. You know, under Mao, there was no private ownership. So they all worked for state factories. And my dad's factory was really big. Actually, it was like a big state enterprise across the China. And they worked 6 days a week. And I don't know where the productivity went to because we were dirt poor. We live on government coupons. So for family of five, to give you a clue, we had to use government-issued coupons to buy wheat and sugar, rice, and meat. We got 2.2 pounds of pork per month for a family of five. So no milk, no eggs. When you get really, really hungry, sometimes we round up money to even eat vegetables, to buy vegetables. So I will be the oldest child to send out to the just a field to get whatever I can get, something green, to come home and boil it. Maybe put salt and Sichuan pepper sauce on, so it kind of help you to swallow the rice down. Otherwise, it would be just totally plain rice. But we were still told we should be grateful we have rice to eat. We were told by the government 2/3 of the world population were starving to death. Even though, you know, our own people were starving to death before I was born, but we didn't know that. So we have to be grateful. Of course, I went to government schools and for next, 12 years and to be brainwashed and to be grateful and to be politically correct. So I think that in short, because how I was growing up and how poor we were and the changes I saw later in China after the opening door policy, I think I become more informed. I knew the world is a different place if I just leave China. So when I gave up China, when I was about 24 years old, I chose to come to America. I was ready to change my life. I did not want to be stuck in China under one party dictatorship, under one tyranny government, where they wanted to control my life for basically until I die. So I really just was determined to leave. So now I've been in this country for about 28 years.
Wow. What a story. Now, when you decided you wanted to leave, was it as simple as just leaving or did you need to get permission? How does that work?
Oh, yes. You need the permission to do everything. What happened to me is that I was brainwashed to be Young Pioneer, Red Guard, Communist Youth Member. I was all politically correct until I went to college at the age of 17. What happens before that Mao died when I was 12. So when I was about 14, the Communist Party come out to say, okay, Mao is not God. Mao was a human being who made a mistake. 10 years Cultural Revolution was a huge mistake made by Mao. Remember, Mao was like a God, Jesus to us, to my generation. So when they come out, made that comment, some kind of statement, we were totally lost. We had no religion because they were forbidden to believe in other religion. Mao, basically communism, was like our religion. So I did not know what to believe. I was depressed for about a year. But thank goodness that the China restated college system. So now people could go to colleges. They were destroyed during the Cultural Revolution. So I decided to go to college to study law. The reason I wanted to study law, because my high school teacher told me when I was 16 that China was ruled by man, not ruled by law. He and his friends who were fresh college graduates were encouraged by the party to criticize party, give them true feedback. Then they all got on the blacklist, were sent to countryside for labor camps. So his health was terribly ruined. So when I visited him when he was sick as class president, that's what he told me. You know, our country is ruled by men, sometimes just a few men. That just hit me. Like, maybe I can change China to a society. It's going to bind by rule of law. So I was idealistic. I was naive. I still believe this state and regime. I went to law school, studied there in Shanghai, one of the best universities in China, for 4 years. And after that, I become school faculty member to teach law because I wanted to stay in Shanghai. I did not want to go back to Chengdu. Shanghai was a lot more westernized. And I opened up a mind there. I met foreign students and professors. So I said, I will stay in Shanghai. So I become law school faculty. And during 3 years being school faculty, I realized the reality is that China is not going to change until all the people demand the change. But lots of people were brainwashed. They still worship Mao today. Think about that, some of them. And they still worship and believe Communist Party dictatorship. I just thought, you know what? They were making me so unhappy by doing my job as a faculty member. If I stay in China, I just could not imagine my entire life will be politically correct, conform to what the party wanted me to do, and climbing my career ladder. I could not be truly happy and free. So I decided to leave. But back to your question, I need permission to leave. Otherwise, I could not get a passport. So the Communist Party committee boss I was fighting with is a guy had to give me permission to leave.
Oh, gosh.
So, I know. So I had to really change my attitude toward him.
Yeah.
I had to change my behaviors. I had to become politically, diplomatically correct in order for him to like me again and trust me again to give me permission to leave China. I did everything by myself. I got accepted by University of Texas at Austin to get a master's degree in school social work. And I did my TOEFL exam. I did all the application. I found an American sponsor who would sponsor me because I did not have money. And so I did everything by myself. All I needed is my boss permission to leave. To give you understanding about Chinese universities, there are two types of supervision. One is political supervision, which is Communist Party committee in every university in every department, and in my law school too. Another division is academic, which is your dean, your professors, and then they talk about academic subjects.
Yeah.
But to leave China, which involves some kind of political, gas process, you have to be approved by the Communist Party committee chair. So this old man and I did not get along, but I start to butter him up to say, I need to go to the United States, better my education. Maybe I can be better faculty when I come back after I get my master's degree, and kind of convince him to let me go. But he said, well, you need to sign this agreement before I give you permission to go to apply for passport. The agreement is that I promise to go back to China after my master's degree immediately to teach. Otherwise, my job in Shanghai will be gone, and they will send my personnel file to Chengdu, where I came from. Say personnel file is something the government created for each person, each child when you enter primary school. And this file follow you through student years and until you work, until you die. Without this personnel file, you cannot just move from one city to another. So you have to have this file with you. And the file determine where is your official residence. So my official residence was in Shanghai when I left Shanghai. But if I don't go back to my job on time after my master's degree, guess what? They're going to send my file to Chengdu. That means I will not even be able to work in Shanghai anymore. It's really difficult to move up to a bigger city from a secondary city. So that's a big threat. That means, hey, we're going to kick you out of Shanghai if you don't go back on time. Of course, another threat is getting me out of the party, which I didn't care. I hate it. I had to join the party in order to be teacher in law school, to be politically correct. Everybody has to join Communist Party. We had no choice. If you become other party members, it's not good for your career. So I was some kind of on probation status anyway. I didn't care about that. But to lose my official status in Shanghai, going back to Chengdu, and there's dark shadow in my file someday, somewhere, to say I never went back. And the file, I don't know where it is. It's still in the security bureau, police station, somewhere in my hometown in Chengdu today. It's kind of scary sometimes to think about it. So they know where my families live and all that stuff in Chengdu. And they keep track of people. Like animals, oh, really good. The Chinese government is so good about controlling, tracking their own citizens. I had to sign it. I left, got my passport, went to apply for visa twice, and that was 2 months before my 24th birthday. I got $100 collected and borrowed from my friends, and my English wasn't good enough, and I landed in Austin, Texas airport in 1988, 1 year before the Chinese Tiananmen Square massacre. But I was so happy, even though I did not have much to start in this country. I just got out of China, make me really excited and happy. I was dreaming about for years, even after I came to this country, I was trapped. I could not leave. I could not escape. I had to become mermaid to swim across the ocean to come to the United States. That was my nightmare, you know. So I think that people say, were you scared? Of course, I was nervous. I was scared. I didn't know how to pay bills. You know, I only had $100. I'm going to cover graduate school. I did not know. But I just had this confidence. I had this faith. I will make it. And for some reason, I come to this country. My luck, everything just, you know, changed. And, you know, I met my husband the first night when I arrived at Austin, Texas. And now we'll be married for 26 years. We dated for 2 years. He taught me lots of English and helped me to overcome cultural barriers. And that's where we met, Austin, Texas. So it's quite a destiny, I guess. That's what people say. It's a fate. You met the first night.
Yeah, that's incredible. First of all, congratulations. How many years of marriage? I'm sorry. I know you just said it.
26.
26. Congratulations on that. I mean, there's so much to congratulate you on with this life story, but 26 years of marriage, way to go. That's awesome. But
thank you.
So you really met him the first night?
Yes. Well, what happens is my American sponsor happened to be the next door neighbor of John's parents. John was going to graduate school in Texas A&M. He was visiting his mother that night. And his mother said, stay here tonight. We have this Chinese student coming over to our school. And, you know, she is from Mongolia riding horses or something. It's pretty funny. John thought I would be a big Mongolian woman who riding horses, like Western woman. And I showed up. I'm like about 5'1" and very skinny and very airsick coming here. And, you know, he wasn't love at first sight, but I just remember John's eyes were really blue, really blue. It's like ocean blue. It's like, people here look like aliens. Yeah, so, but the whole family was so warm, so nice. They offered me Texas Bluebell ice cream. And John took me to campus next day to visit UT Austin. And I couldn't speak English. It was hard. I was jet-lagged, very sleepy. And he took me to Dinosaur Museum. I remember is, like, what, 20 kind of dinosaurs? Source and source. That's all I remember, source. Cannot tell difference among those dinosaur museums.
They're all source. They're all source of some
all
sort.
Source, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny.
So going back to something you spoke about in your life story in China, you talked about how everyone was brainwashed, but it seems pretty clear to me that you were able to escape the brainwashing. Now, maybe you were brainwashed for a while, but clearly you broke out of it and others didn't.
I think it's in my blood. To tell you some family background, I was not born just like a typical Chinese, like a extremely poor family little girl. My real grandfathers, and whom I never met, my mother's side, real grandfather was killed. He was the mountain outlaw leader in Sichuan province. So he was somebody who got the money, got the power, and did not obey the law, was hunted, and he got killed by his own man under him. When my mother was a baby, my grandmother had to escape the village to go to Chengdu to look for jobs and to protect her two babies. My father's side, grandfather, was a landowner, but got some weird disease. He had to sell all his properties to treat his disease. And he was a smart man. He was writing court papers for the people in the villages. And my dad lost both parents when he was 5, become an orphan, adopted by his uncle to work on the farms. My dad still illiterate today. But I got all those family genes in me. It's like I was born acting a little bit different than other girls. I was always rebellious. I just remember when I was little, I loved to read. I really empowered myself with books, with knowledge and history. And when I was 7 years old, went to school, I was the best student in elementary school, first grade. I was so confident. I told my girlfriend to say, I will be the first one to join Young Pioneer because I have the best grades and everything. And I was a little bit too trusting her, a little bit too confident, which was not politically correct. She reported to my teacher. So at the age of 7, I got biggest lecture in my life from my teacher. She told me, I'm not going to nominate you to become Young Pioneer, which is Mao's grassroots elementary school students organization. She said, you're not humble. You're too confident. You're too expressive. I need to teach you a lesson about collective society. I did. I learned a lesson. Wow. I did not join Young Pioneer for a year. And I was so upset. If you look at my elementary school pictures on my website, I was sitting in the front row, not happy, not smiling. I did not have a red scarf on my white shirt where my other friends did. But I learned a lesson. I better not trust anybody. I need to have a double face. I need to climb the ladder, move up. And we were required to write diaries, for example. I learned after that lesson, I better not to say anything that's really truly of myself in my diary because my teacher is going to read them. So don't say anything you think in your diaries. You know,
wow.
Sometimes you just have to play around, make something up and to look good. So I learned that lesson. I moved up. And I was criticized for being too happy. I like to smile. I was naturally happy person. But you see China movies, old movies, people look the same. They don't smile. My teacher said, you need to look like other people. Why are you so happy smiling all the time? And I was criticized to wear bright colors. As a girl, I like to be pretty. I was told, you need to look like other people. Green, black, blue and white, and to conform. Don't wear some beautiful flowers, bright colors, even under your mouse jacket. And I was criticized my hairstyle. I had bands. The bands were Western style, capitalist style. I should look more revolutionary. Put my hair back, no bands on my forehead. And I learned even to keep my personal album, to keep all my old China pictures, I had to do that in secret because in the school, I was a red student, very, very top grades and very politically correct. If I told people I'm collecting a photo album for personal sentimental reasons, that's a capitalist style. I would be criticized. So I just learned how to play the society game, you know, do something quiet for myself, collect my own albums and my own pictures because I knew someday that's my life. I want to keep them for sentimental reasons. And I never thought I would come to the United States, of course. Did not think that far ahead. And but I was criticized. So I just learned how to play double sides and deal with the reality, the public, and then personally in my private life. And I still want to look pretty. I still want to, you know, sing and dance and doing all this stuff. And so you can see I was kind of born libertarian, but I was brainwashed by the society. So I become kind of like a person who has two faces and two lives. And, they did make me a true believer. I truly loved Mao. He was my God. I was raised as Buddhist, but I could not go to Buddhist temples to worship my Buddha. I would be criticized. You can never change. You can never join Young Pioneer, Red Guards if you believe another religion, another God. So I had just totally believed the party, believed Chairman Mao. And the Chairman Mao was like my God because think about it. I could see him raise his face in the fire, smiling at me. And then I see him in the clouds talking to me. You know, it's like some kind of, you know, illusion. I don't know. It just so I kind of just had to move out in order to be successful. And my parents were very brainwashed too. So they all conforming. even though my dad was the one who constantly had issues with his Communist Party bosses, that they actually got rid of my dad when he was 40 years old from a state factory because he was a nonconformist, always argue with his bosses. They told him, Mr. Tang, we need you to work in the countryside. That's like 2 days bus ride away from my families. They do not send you families go along with you when you go send to the rural countryside to work. My dad had to go by himself. My dad said, boss, I cannot do it. My wife is always sick. I got 3 little kids. I got to feed them. I got to help with them. You know, I cannot go. Then they push him to retire. My dad said, hey, I'm young, I'm strong, I can do something on my own and feed my family. So he took early retirement. But then when he was ready to start his own business, his city government would not give him a license. Said, you're retired, you have income, you cannot go start your bicycle repair business. My dad said, my income cannot keep our family of 5 fit. Say, you know, don't care, you got to reserve those, you know, opportunities for younger people. I'm sure my dad, if he had money to bribe officials, he could get a license. Instead, my dad worked for about 10 years illegally in the streets of Chengdu, fixed bicycles and pedaling tricycles to carry passengers around because he did not have education. He couldn't do other things. He had to use his hard labor, sweat, and to work. He got robbed. He lost his money. One time he broke his nose and had to run to hospital without telling police. Then the city called the city, we call it Chengguan, like a city committee people one time also confessed his equipment and everything, said you are working illegally. Then he had to start over again by borrowing money. And he had to make money. That's how I went to college. My dad, you know, sent me money every month for food. Even though the state paid for my tuition and the dorm, but I had to eat. We're so poor, just by sending me food money every month was a difficult task. So now you say where I stand on government regulations and licensing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like I learned at a very young age.
Yeah, it is just so clear that rebellion just it's in your blood. I mean, it's all in your family. It makes total sense to me how you were able to escape that mindset. Now I want to switch gears just slightly. I feel like we could talk about your background and your time in China for another couple of hours, but of course we don't have that much time. Of course, you came to the United States and you've been very successful and you've actually run for 2 different political offices. Is that correct? You ran for state representative in 2014 and then U.S. Senator this year. Is that correct?
Yes, I just ran last, 2016, I was a Libertarian nominee for U.S. Senate.
Yeah, so before, I'm going to ask you to tell me all about it, but I just want to tell you, just so that you know, I did vote for you. I do live in Colorado, and I did a whole episode on the podcast about voting, and I generally don't like to vote for people, and we could go into that later, but I made a special exception to vote for you. So
thank you.
You had my vote. So what was it like? You ran for 2 political offices. Can you tell us about it?
Well, I actually, to be politically active and to even be aware what I could do in this country was a long journey. My husband is long-time libertarian. He was very influential in changing my political opinions. Think about it, I was fighting against my own government the whole time, but I also was a statist. When I came to this country, I did not know anything about free market, about individual liberty. I was statist. I said, government should do this, government should do that. Only when I got laid off by my corporate job, 2000, telecom bubble, I become self-employed. I always wanted to be my own boss. I started my own consulting company. I had a time to get a kind of watch news, to read online about politics. And I got involved with local HOA and charter school board, so I could learn grassroots democracy. I was curious, you know, inquisitive. I wanted to learn. But then the more I learned, you know, the more I start to doubt what I learned in the past. Just think about it. Jiang is the one who told me Mao starved 35 million people to death. I did not know that. I thought it was 3 years natural disasters. The bad weather caused starvation. That's what my government told me. So I had to learn, read lots of books. My husband said, don't trust your government. You got to read books now on your own. It's not true. I realized my whole life was a lie. So I started to get involved in American politics. I went to, state capital, doing my internship, started after I got laid off. But I was busy raising three children, started my own business and paying bills. I wasn't politically active until 2008. I was a Republican for many years because I thought limited government in their platform sounds good. I become Republican until 2008 when Bush bailed out everybody, including big banks and all that, and expanded government power. I just could not do Republican Party anymore. Well, my husband said, well, there's Libertarian Party. So I look into it. I become registered Libertarian because at the beginning I saw Libertarians can never win. I should, join a big party and Libertarians are too small, two parties. But when I got so mad, it's like I stayed true to my principle. I'm not going to, the Colorado GOP was also kind of interesting. There's another story about that. So I become a Libertarian. And 2012, I become Gary Johnson's district coordinator as a volunteer. I thought that was fun, to get involved in the political elections and process. Then 2014 at the state convention, I was recruited to run for state house by Nick Sarwark, which is our current national chair.
Yeah.
He said, Lily, we need you to run. I said, I'm not ready. He said, you are ready. I said, I still don't speak good English. I still have accent. I have a lot to learn.
Oh, your English is fantastic.
Oh, thank you. But I think practicing two campaigns helped a lot.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So I started to go out. Once I committed to myself to run, I went out, even though I was recruited on the spot. And people always give me big hands when I start to tell them what happened to me under Mao, why I came to this country, how little I started in this country. And then people like my messages. I thought that was a rewarding experience. So I become a state chair 2015. I ran for state chair after my campaigns over 2014. So I wanted to learn about party business and how things work. And welcome, recruit more people into Libertarian Party. Then I resigned as state chair last January so I can run for U.S. Senate. And I did have one challenger. And he ran last time, like 2014. Then when I won the 60-something percent of vote at the state convention, he changed his mind. He ran for another office. So I did not have a challenger anymore. People voted again. I got 100% unanimous support to run for U.S. Senate. I enjoyed running for U.S. Senate. I tried my best. I mean, there are lessons to be learned. I had about a core group of maybe 20 volunteers help me out. And I got on all the radio stations I could find. I'm shameless about knocking on the doors to offer people. Say, hey, I'm U.S. Senate candidate on Libertarian ticket. Can I talk to you? Can I get on your show? I have a unique story. I have very, very compelling messages about freedom. So lots of people sometimes did not even know me, but they just said, okay, we'll give you 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Then later they give me more minutes. They found out I'm interesting, I'm entertaining, I'm very passionate. So I got on many major radios multiple times. I also got into debate. When I wanted to debate at the Club 20 in Grand Junction against Daryl Glenn and Michael Bennett, they told me I wasn't qualified because we did not have 1% registered Libertarian in the state. So we did a registration campaign on Facebook, and by the state party helped me out. We registered 3,000 Libertarians. We only needed 1,000 to be qualified to get into debate. So I went to debate. It was the first time in 20 years a Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate got into that debate on the same stage with two major party candidates. And I was the only woman, only immigrant. But people still give me loudest cheers. They like my messages. They like me. I don't talk like politician. And I just give straight talk. And and based on my principles, and so people really like me. But those two candidates were going after each other. They ignored me because I was not true threat to them, and I challenged them both. I attacked them both.
Good for you.
Because both party candidates, they want the big government, no matter, you know, which angle, which issue you look at it, you know. They might have their different pet projects, different issues, and that was really fun. I had like four libertarian supporters to go with me in the car, and then we had local host to put us in her house, and we all showed up, and they all sit in the front row, and I had a lady hired to do my makeup and all that. It was great. I got quite a lot of quotes from that debate. You know, have you heard about my famous quotes in that debate?
No.
It was quoted by lots of newspapers. I said, I will be, that politician cannot be bought. And I suggest all politicians wear body cameras. And the people
that's great.
People loved it. It's like, hey, I say, hey, since they're watching us, why can't we watch them? They work for us, pay them.
You know? That's not how it works, you see.
I know. They think they're our masters, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. So that mean that even though, you know, it was a close race and it was you know, I was disappointed about my percentages, but still I had lots of fun. We had lots of volunteers. I got my lame messages out, and I went to like a channel like a 9 or my local TV stations had like 7 minutes and individual interview with two reporters, and you know, it's all on my website, and then CBS locally also, and said, hey, regardless of her odds of winning, but Lily Tong Williams got loudest cheers from the crowds, and then later excluded me from all other debate by the Channel 9 and by Chamber of Commerce. And their criteria were not higher. So it was unbelievable, impossible for third party candidates to achieve like 15% in the polling. I'm not even in the polls. How can I even achieve 15%? There are lots of polls did not include me. You know, yeah. I mean, very few included me. So we just, we whine, we complain, we organize Facebook campaign to write to them. And PBS, at the beginning did not want me get into debate. We all complained and wrote to them. So later they decided to do a candidates forum. So they invite all third party candidates, me, Green Party, and the Unity Party. Three of us went to their studio. We had 30 minutes, kind of like a conversation to introduce ourselves, answer reporters' questions. My libertarian message is certainly very unique. I also got a John Cadera from Independence Institute interview me and the Green Party candidate. Most importantly, me and Green Party candidate, Mr. McConey, we team up together. We did a 5 college campuses town halls. We went to Grand Junction, you know, like Metro. Mm-hmm. We went to CU Boulder, CSU. Then we also did one in DU, and I also went to UCCS with another event. So he and I did at least 4 college campus town halls, got the students coming. It was open to public, and we had a truly real good debate. You know, no matter how much difference we had, we team up together to have conversations with mutual respect. You know, and we had a reporter from Colorado Independence, who also sent, you know, volunteered to be our moderator, and we got everything recorded and shared online. It was great. I really enjoyed talking to young people, connect with them, and to get them fired up, to be inspired to care about liberty now before it's too late, and to warn them about the government indoctrination. There are lots of college students who don't know the truth, who believe in more left ideologies. So sometimes you have to go out there, you know, with due respect to their positions, but you have to tell the truth. So that's what I did. Yeah, and that was lots of fun, actually.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you did that. You've said a couple of times, and I think it's so true, that the reason that people pay attention to you and that people are so interested to hear your story is because it's so unique. And I think it's only appropriate for Lily Tang Williams to be doing something new and unique. And I'm going to, dare I say it, we're going to break some breaking news here on the Battle for Liberty podcast. Lily has made an announcement on Facebook for another unique move for her and her family. Can you tell us about it?
Well, this early morning, I made an announcement that I signed the pledge with the Free State Project. I have been following with the Free State Project for a while. I know the president, Matt Phillips, but I never went there to really dig into it. I was committed in Colorado, raising family, have my business here. Until last November, after my race, I said, I need to go check out what it's about. So I went there for 4 days, and I met about 20 local libertarians who joined the Free State Project, already moved there. And my realtor, who is actually a former state representative, and who told me all about the political system. We went to state capitol, got a state constitution. You know what shocked me at the state capitol?
What?
The state capitol for New Hampshire, they did not have cops there, security guards. They did not have metal detectors. You can walk in there with a concealed carry and go into those meetings. It was so cool, so shocking. And I was very, very impressed. Then they told me they have the largest representative government in the country. For every 3 citizens, you are entitled to 1 state representative. So for the state, they have a total 400 state representatives. That's like what kind of representation is that? You know?
It's better than anywhere else. That's, I can tell you that.
And they have no state income tax. They have no sales tax. And so they use property tax to pay for lots of government functions and public schools. I would like to see that reduced. They are very big on Second Amendment. They repeal civil assets forfeitures, and they organize civil disobedience against police state. And they just learn lots of things about this state. Live free or die. Just connect with me. Connect with my soul. I was so excited when I come home. I've been following up with Facebook, do more research, reading more, and watch their videos. And so I start to convince my husband, should we make this big change in our life before we are too old, before we just wait for retirement? Do we want to have liberty in our lifetime? You know, this state, do it. 20,000 libertarians have signed up to move there within next 5 years. I want to be the early group to move there. 2,000 have already moved there. And they're such a nice, liberty-loving people. I was very impressed with them. I love them. I think they will be an important part of the big family. And I after 2 months of research and soul searching, I just feel like, I'm always drawn to freedom. And it's not about weather. Thank God I'm not moving there for the weather. They all tell me it's so cold, Lily, there. I say, you think I'm moving there for the weather? You know, I'm moving there. I think just like a Mormons or move to Utah, when you choose a smaller state like New Hampshire with 20,000 libertarians move there, and their business regulation is really light, and it's easier to start your business there. And so even their Republican Party there are more libertarians than Colorado. And so they're truly just connecting with my values, with my beliefs. And I think I can go there, make an impact and to get involved and to keep this state truly as a free state. Because I'm afraid that Colorado is becoming more and more blue. You know, that after all the laws we just passed last year, minimum wage.
I know.
And the open primary and ballot access standards got raised and it's a big state. And I've been here for 19 years. I love Colorado. I have lots of, friends here. I have my 3 young adult children here. My youngest daughter is almost 18 now. She's going to college this year. So I just feel like this is my second chance. if it was difficult for me to leave China, everything behind to come to this country, this is not as that difficult, right? I have my husband by my side. I speak English now. I have more resources, you know, to do things and to move. And, you know, it was hard when I first came over, when you just did not even know how to survive, how to pay bills. I would have all the friends who belong to Free State Project to help me out. So it doesn't matter where I am. My messages are, you know, universal. You know, people still follow me, can cross the country. I'm just hoping by going there, I will keep everybody updated, making comparisons, hope more people will come to join us. Only the liberty-loving people, though.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. Well, I got to say, as a resident of Colorado, I sure am sad to have you leave, but I'm so happy for you and your family. I could tell reading the announcement on Facebook how happy you guys are, and I think that's going to be great. I think you're going to find a wonderful home in New Hampshire, and you better be careful of how flowery you talk about it, because now I'm going to have to talk to my wife about it.
Well, there are lots of young people like you moving there, even young couples. I met this couple who are not even married yet. I mean, they're engaged now. And they went there first day and with all the Free Staters' help. They got a job, they got an apartment, and they meet every week. They're like libertarian groups, Free Staters meet every week. And I saw them testify in the Capitol. And they are trying to legalize recreational marijuana, and try to make it a free to work state. You know, unions don't like that. They also have a homeschoolers educational scholarship program. So there are so many things going on in that state that people like us in Colorado only, you know, would feel jealous about it. I think it's because it's in their bone, in their culture. And if you look at their state constitution, it's very short and not like Colorado. And they even do not rule out revolution for their state. If federal government become total tyranny and they have the right to declare independence, that's why they choose this state, have port access, have ocean access. The second place they voted for was Wyoming, but Wyoming has no access to ocean. And Alaska has ocean, but then it's so isolated, it's very far away. So they voted 10 years ago, 2003, they voted for Free State to be in New Hampshire. It's still voted by the Cato Institute, the most free state in the whole country right now. So my job to go there, I have to swear my, make a statement of intent. I go there to help to creation of the society where government's maximum rule is to protect life, liberty, and property. Nothing else. So just keep them doing those things. That's it. So I just love it. It's like, okay, that's my job. That's my mission for the rest of my life there. Yeah.
Wow, good for you. What another fantastic story. You're just full of interesting things. And I guess my last question is, aside from moving across the country with your family eventually, what's next for you? Are you going to run for office again when you get there? What do you see in the future?
I will get a political active there one way or another. I might run for office. I don't know. You have to live in the state for at least 2 years to consider running for office. But right now, I can tell you, I have not had an interview since I got invited to be speaker by Texas Tech University. My sponsor is a victim of communism, Memorial Foundation. They started this new college program to have people like me to travel around the country to educate, connect with all our young students on college campuses. So on March 9th, I will be making my first speech at the Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas. And so I appreciate my sponsor to help me with that. You know, they pay all my expenses and small speaking fee. But I just love to connect with our young people, you know, and take them away from just the college campus leftist agenda. They need to know the foundation of liberty, the self-ownership, the free market principles. That's all better to help the poor, to help everybody to achieve success and to live a happy, prosperous life. So I'm committed to do that as long as I can. to travel around the country, give speeches, connect with college students, and maybe I will try to even, you know, do some of that in New Hampshire. And of course, connect with the free staters in the New Hampshire to really control the local government from the town level to the county to the state. The New Hampshire allows citizens to walk into any local town hall meetings to vote for their own city's budget. Is that great?
That's
I cannot
amazing.
Do that in Parker.
That's great.
They fight over like a couple bucks or sometimes. Yeah.
Good.
So you can vote. You have the power.
Oh, wow. Well, we will, is information for that event in March, is that on your website?
Not yet, because they're making a poster right now. You can make announcement on March 9th. I will be speaking at Texas Tech, sponsored by Victim of Communism Memorial Foundation. My topic is already set. It's my journey for freedom from Mao's young pioneer to libertarian. And that's my topic. I will show my old pictures from China and tell them about my stories, my family stories, and why I truly believe in libertarianism, which is maximum personal freedom and minimum limited government. That's all I want. I don't want government to do anything else for me. Just do the things it's supposed to do and then leave me hell alone.
That's excellent. I could not have said it any better myself. Now, where can people learn more about you and get in touch with you?
I have a public Facebook page called Lily for Liberty, LILY number 4, Liberty, Lily for Liberty. I have over 16,000 followers right now, and help me to get them more, spread my messages. I have a Twitter account also at Lily for Liberty. My website, which is fixed, you can see my journey, my issues, and my videos and pictures, lilyforliberty.com. So I'm very accessible. And so I welcome you. Check me out. Stay in touch and follow my journey.
We will be doing just that. Lily Tang Williams, thank you so much for being on the show. We are definitely going to be watching your activities as you make another big move with your family. Don't be a stranger. You are welcome on the Battle for Liberty anytime. Thank you so much.
Sure, I will. Thanks for having me, Mike. Good talk with you.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks so much for listening. I'm very happy you decided to tune in. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and refer that friend. Help me spread the word about the Battle for Liberty. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at MyBattleLiberty, on Gab at Battle for Liberty, or on Facebook at the Battle for Liberty Facebook page. Once again, the show notes page for this week is battleforliberty.com/25. Thanks so much for joining us, and until next time, battle on.